It's Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, well, we're having wonderful, wonderful weather here. It's hitting the 90s, and I am so happy. What can I say? Today is a very special day. I have one of my favorite authors. Lawrence Block is joining us today. But first, before I say hello to him, I want to play a special song. So I hope you're listening. Okay, well, the day before your birthday, I had to play that song for you. Whoa, this is exciting, isn't it?
Yeah,
well, whenever you have anytime you have a birthday, it's a great thing. And, at your age, we're not going to say, I don't know if you want to say, tell people how old you are, but I know I talked to Mary Higgins Clark when she was 89, and she was having... She came out with another hit, one of her wonderful books, and so you're a spring chicken compared to that, right?
Well, I turn 82 tomorrow, Patsy.
Wow, that's fantastic, and this is a wonderful thing about being an author. You can write, you can keep writing and writing and writing.
Wait a minute, that's the good thing?
Yeah, I think it is. Don't you think it's wonderful? It's better than, having to retire at 65, and gosh knows what people do who retire at 65.
I guess you got a point.
Yeah. So, if you hadn't become a writer, what would you have become?
I don't know. It probably would have been something in the verbal world. Maybe I'd have gone into advertising or something like that. Or I could have gone into law.
That's what I was thinking. I bet you would have become a lawyer. Your daughter, Jill Block, of course, is a lawyer. And I have a feeling that, I was reading your collection of stories about Martin H. Aaron Graff, and I was thinking about that I bet you would have been a really fantastic lawyer, really out there, because you're a very imposing character. You would have been one of those kind of lawyers that everybody wanted to interview, and would have made you would have been as famous as your clients.
Well, I don't know. If I'd been like most of the lawyers that I've known, I'd have wondered why on earth I'd gotten into that profession and how I could get out of it.
Well, so, I don't
not
know.
Sure I would have loved it.
You actually would have loved it, because why they don't get out of it, you go over to, if you ever go to Beverly Hills, and like every other house is actually owned by a famous lawyer, there's a lot of reasons why they don't get out of it. But it does... Generally speaking, you can't last quite as long as a lawyer as you certainly have as a writer, and you've got maybe another decade or two, in you. So it's wonderful. I think it's great to be that you're a writer.
Well, I'm delighted that you're delighted.
And of course, we should mention that there's somebody else in your life had a birthday just recently on Juneteenth.
Oh, right. My character Keller has a birthday on the 19th of June.
And of course, there you wrote of. I think there's a book or a story, his horoscope, Keller's horoscope, that's available I know it's available on Kindle because I got it. So that it's a fascinating story.
Well, I'm glad you like it. Should we talk about the new book?
Oh, yeah. Well, we that's why we're here, because this is amazing. And it's you've gotten such wonderful, wonderful comments from everybody, including one of my favorite authors, Joe Lansdale, who described it, I think, what did he say, dark and cold? Everyone is saying that, you know, this has to be one of your very, very best books.
That's what the reactions have been, which delights me, of course. You know, I think it's remarkable at this age that I can still type and make whole sentences. So I'm delighted at the response that the book has gotten. Now, I'm sure the response, as you know, tomorrow is its publication day, and I'm sure the overall response to Dead Girl Blues will be mixed, because a lot of people won't like it. But the people who do are really saying awfully nice things about it.
Well, it's because the writing is top notch. I mean, you know, after all these years, you certainly have mastered the art of writing, and I think that comes across very, you know, very clearly. Of course, the story is, as Joe said, I mean, it's a dark story. It's not an easy story, and some people will say, you know, I don't know if they want it, but for looking at it from the writing perspective. And of course, you've written so many books actually about writing. So somewhere along the line, I think you learned how to do it.
Well, I probably know how to write a book at this point. It's not my first rodeo, but whether or not it's any good is something else again, and that's never guaranteed.
Well, no, it's never guaranteed, but it is. When you're able to put together a real concept, first of all, the storyline, how much do you want to tell people, or how much can you tell people on about it?
I don't know.
You like people to be surprised?
Well, I like people to be able to approach your work without a lot of preconceptions. I can say that it's a dark story. It's told by a man in late middle age, and it begins with a crime that he commits when he's in his 20s, and he rapes and murders a woman, and not in that order. And it's
well, I think that's enough. You know, in a way, it's true. I never know. You know, when I get books, and I get so many books, I never look at the promos or the things that they send me in advance. You know, the publicists send me things, or there's stuff on Amazon or wherever. For me, it's the excitement of turning the pages and this reveal slowly.
Sure, it's a discovery.
That's what makes it. And I mean, that's, you know, when you're looking for books that you know, escape. You know, you escape into a different world, and that's how it happens. If a book has this reveal as you're going along, and the page turning comes from this, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And why did something happen? And that, you know, I just love that. And it reminds me of actually something I think you wrote about recently, about the escaping into fiction, where I can escape into anything that's written. I will get, you know, I will pick up a box of, and lately we have so many, all of these things of disinfectant, and all, I'm reading the back of them, and
You've been escaping into hand sanitizer.
Yeah, exactly. I have to read about it. I want to know what's going on. But you mentioned in one of your blog, or one of your newsletters, you have one of the best newsletters, by the way. I have to tell people, they really must go to your website. It's lawrenceblock.com and sign up for your newsletter, because you have a really informative and a funny and interesting newsletter. I love the part where you have the questions are asked of you and you answer back. And it's a really great newsletter, because so many times a newsletter is not, you know, you get them and you don't really get involved. But your newsletters are fun reads.
Well, thank you, Patsy. That's nice to hear.
Because you mentioned, I think it was in one of those, about the bookstore escape. While There's Still Time, which was, you know, a famous bookstore. Speaking of famous bookstores, that terrible thing in Minneapolis where they burnt down the Uncle Hugo's bookstore. But this is what it's all about, escaping into a book. And particularly at this time, I think people really need to escape into a book.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I better not to turn on the television and not to obsess too much about. Actually, we shouldn't be reading the back of the hand sanitizer things, but you know, you get sort of, you do get obsessed with this, you know, current events, and it's much more fun to get obsessed in books. And when people want, they can get obsessed with your books and just start at the beginning of all your series.
Well, they'd have a lot of reading to do. And, you know, you were saying that a nice thing about being a writer is that I can go on and do this forever. But one does get tired of it. And one doesn't want to do the same thing over and over. Actually, as far as the marketplace is concerned, it continually rewards people who do the same thing over and over. Readers like the world to be somewhat predictable. If they like a writer, they want to continue reading what he writes, and they want him to continue writing essentially the same thing. And there's an enormous economic incentive to do what has worked for you in the past. But I got spoiled some time ago in that if I don't enjoy and think highly of what I'm writing, I stop. I don't finish it. I just can't do it. And that, I think, has probably, you know, kept me from the higher levels of income over the years. That's certainly the case, that I keep moving on to different things and not staying forever with the tried and true.
And that's true, that you do lose an audience. Sometimes an audience won't go to the other series. They're stuck, like, they love Matthew Scudder, but they're not willing even to sometimes try one of your other series. And
absolutely true. That's true of a lot of people. Now, I have a lot of readers who read or at least look at anything that I've written, but there are a lot who were specific fans of a series, and that's it. And that's their right. That's absolutely their right. But
you're right.
If I had just done what would work best for me commercially that way, I think I probably would have made a lot more money over the years and had a much higher profile. And I think also I would have burned out and stopped writing 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think you've done it just right. And we have the joy of all of the different characters that you come out with. Because, you know, I only recently got into the Martin Aaron Graff book. So it's always like it's a discovery with you. We find something new and remarkable. Next thing we know, maybe you'll write a children's book. How about that?
No, I don't think I could.
No?
Interestingly enough, no, I know some people who go back and forth and do both juvenile and adult and young adult fiction, but I just don't think I'm geared that way. I've entertained the notion from time to time and thought about it, and I've decided that it just wouldn't work.
Well, what was your favorite book when you were a kid?
Gee, I don't remember.
You know, I just realized because I was, it's your birthday, and I looked up where you were born, and you were born in Buffalo. Somehow I always think of you, you are so New York City. You have really put your stamp on New York City. I think many people have a vision of New York City based on what you've written about it. So I had forgotten that you were born in Buffalo.
Oh, yes. I was born and grew up in Buffalo. And actually, you just mentioned the Aaron Graff stories. And it's not that specific throughout, but they're set in Buffalo.
Exactly. And, you know, why, I was thinking about it. What was your, you were there still, yeah, you were a child, with the big library that used to be there?
Yeah.
In Buffalo. Did you go there to that famous library?
The downtown library I didn't get to often, but I read a fair amount as a child, and especially when I was in high school, was when I started reading, adult mainstream fiction, and that was a turning point.
Well, did you have a local library that you went to when you were a kid, or did you have a library card?
I had a library card. I think I mostly got things from the school library.
And,
sometimes from one of the branch libraries.
Yeah?
But, you know.
So tell me, when you were, what kind of a kid were you in school? Were you the best student, or?
I was a good student. I don't know what kind of a kid I was.
Well, do you think that you were? Were you ever a teacher's pet?
Probably not.
Now, when you get back to Buffalo very often?
Oh, hardly ever. My mother died about 18, 19 years ago, and I think I've been back there once since then, but I haven't really got that much reason to go there.
And the only reason I had ever thought about, I passed sort of through nearby was that they have the original Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, I think is the original, is there, because he worked for a short period of time in Buffalo.
I am?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I had thought about one time going through, but it just quite never got there, although I had seen a photo of the library, downtown library, which it was a beautiful building, but they knocked it down, which happens so often, because my childhood library is also a beautiful building. It's still there. And you know what they did to it?
They must have hung a plaque saying this was Patsy's library.
No, this is...
No, they didn't.
They should.
They absolutely should.
What they did is they've covered it with plastic. Now, this is in Detroit, Michigan. They covered it with plastic and boarded up the windows. And they've left all the books inside to rot. It's like... It's such a tragedy. I still can't get my hand around it because I spent so many hundreds of hours in that library, and it was a beautiful building, one of those 1930s buildings, that they built strong and big and gorgeous, and they just covered it with plastic. And of course,
it sounds like something Christo would do.
Yeah, and something maybe Stephen King would write one of the stories in your most recent anthology. It would also be a perfect location because it is, pretty creepy. Tell us about the most recent anthology.
Well, the new anthology, and it's out within the past month, is called The Darkling Halls of Ivy. and it's stories, it's a cross-genre anthology in that there are some stories that are crime stories, some that are mainstream, some that are horror or dystopian fiction. So it's not that much a creature of genre, of specific genre, but it's all the stories have an academic setting. They're all set in or around higher education. And I thought when I conceived of this, you know, when you're putting an anthology together, it has to have a theme in order for it to be more than just, hey, here are some stories. But a problem with a themed anthology is that it sometimes all the stories come out the same. And this was not the case here. This was a terrific collection, no two stories alike at all, but they all have the common setting of a college or university. And there are terrific people in it, as you know. You mentioned Joe Lonsdale, who's got a wonderful story in here, as does David Morrell, Ian Rankin, Todd Goldberg, Jane Hamilton,
and Jill, your daughter, and Jill, of course, has
my daughter.
Yeah, we have to mention.
Jill Block has the story in here.
And Tom Straw, how about that?
And Tom, absolutely, and Warren Moore, and as I said, a lot of good people. I don't have the book sitting in front of me, so I can't read the list to you, but as you know, there are a lot of good people.
Oh, and there one I really promoted for Father's Day because I thought it was just the ideal gift. Well, I love anthologies in general, and I thought, you know, this is a great gift. As you said, no, it's they're not specific stories, you know, about they're not all the same, and there's such a variety, and everybody would find at least, I would say, half a dozen that they absolutely adore, and the others that are sort of eye-opening and actually introduce you to writers that you might not know. So that's why I love anthologies.
Yeah, it's a nice package, I think.
I think it's great. Well, I'm just want to, you know, thank you so much for joining me today, because it's a very, very special time in your life. You're celebrating your birthday tomorrow. You have come out with, well, just in a month between, Dead Girl Blues and the wonderful anthology, Darkling Halls of Ivy. You're on a real, you know, gangbusters out there promoting your books. Well, of course, not out there, because you have to be in there, but you are have a wonderful, wonderful, as I mentioned, you have a wonderful and dynamic website that has everything people will want to learn about you, and also sign up for your newsletter. And it's lawrenceblock.com. And Larry, I just want to thank you. I thought we would see each other at VoucherCon, but it looks like they went ahead and canceled.
No, there won't be a VoucherCon.
They canceled it. I don't know. I thought that was a little premature. They could have waited perhaps a little longer, because I was so eager to get back. VoucherCons are so much fun. And of course, probably, you know, I don't know. It's crazy. And I know that... But for you, at least, you're so in tune with the internet that you don't stop promoting your books, which is what an author has to do.
Well, maybe you're right.
Well,
let's see what else. You were talking about place and everything, and I could mention that about Dead Girl Blues. It starts in and around Bakersfield, California, and it winds up in Lima, Ohio.
Quite a journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting, too, in that I haven't really spent any time at all in either Bakersfield or Lima, but it's not that much about place. Nothing in the book is that much about place. It's about the interior and exterior life of the man who's telling the story.
Well, it's a fascinating book. It's excellent writing, as everybody has mentioned, and I'm sure will be in all. It's in all the reviews. And again, Larry, I want to thank you so much for joining me, and I just want to say happy birthday to you, and thank you so much. And I hope that we can put together a relay interview so that I can talk to some of the authors from Darkling Halls of Ivy. Okay.
That'd be great, Patsy. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye now, Larry.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to go to commercial, then we'll be right back with a great book. Wow.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. Oh, and I have a very, very special guest today, someone who I really admire, and that is Michael Elias. Hi, Michael. I hope Michael's here. Michael, are you here? Hi. Okay, I'm just trying to get Michael Elias on. He's going to be with me in a few minutes, I know. But meanwhile, I will just again want to say I hope that you will check out Lawrence Block's website, because he is something. He is quite an amazing person, and I'm sure that you will love it. Getting his newsletter, for all you writers out there, it's a sample of how to write a really great newsletter. Okay, well, now I get Michael Elias. Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How about you?
Okay, well, I'm thrilled to have you on. My goodness, my goodness. The minute I got the notice for the title of the book, I got just a headline that said, "Do you want to interview Michael Elias? He wrote a book called You Can Go Home Now." And I thought, oh, yes, yes. Oh, yeah. I think so. Wow. You are an amazing, amazing person, and we have so many things to talk about. In addition to your, this is a one of those thriller suspense books that, it's a grabber.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I like that word.
Well, you know, I just have to tell people that you are also, I think you're quite famous for your television work, and I was a script writer a long time ago in And so I really admire your work. And I always get really happy when I get a scriptwriter on. But then it's also true that I can notice that when they're writing a novel that they were a scriptwriter, because the book reads like a script. You know, it's just wonderful.
Thank you. I think my screenwriting and television writing training, it sort of takes over in that I like to keep it moving, and I can't say you can read the book in 2 hours or an hour and a half like a movie, but I'd like to, as I say, keep things moving and tell a really good story, end my chapters with a kind of cliffhanger, and just keep you interested. I tend not to describe too much, leave it to your imagination, and keep moving.
Well, I think script writing is a great discipline, and you certainly accomplished it here. And what happens with a book like yours is that you're reading the book, and in this case, it's a fascinating story. It's about Nina Karim, a 31-year-old homicide detective, and it reads so nicely that. We do see it in our heads as a film, I think, as we're reading.
Yeah, I confess either that's my aim or it's just the way I write. As a screenwriter, you're trained. You can't. There's a lot of stuff you can't do. You can't say or show what people are thinking. You have to just keep. You're limited to dialogue and action and character, of course, but the character has to be expressed through the action and what people are doing, and you can't describe how people say things and so forth. Well, that's in the novel, of course, you have to embellish a lot more, and I try, but I do like to, I guess, brevity to some degree, and just I hope it grabs you and keeps you interested and in suspense and takes you on an interesting ride.
It certainly does, and I like revenge fiction. I like when people there's something about it. I get a kick out of it. And so, what do you want to tell people about this story without giving too much away? Because I hate to give too much away. I love the reveal. I was just talking to Lawrence Block a few minutes ago, and you know, he's a master of the reveal.
He's the greatest.
Well,
I would say, good.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know what's going to happen, and I love that turning the pages and really wanting always to find out what's going to happen next. And you've got a lot of nice twists and turns in here.
Oh, thank you. Well, the story is about a young policewoman, a homicide detective in Queens, and she's got her own issues, which I'll get to in a moment, but she's basically assigned a series of cold case murders. And she finds a connection to the victims of these murders when she interviews their wives or spouses. And it turns out that they all have the same alibi. At the time their husbands were murdered, they were in a women's shelter for battered women. And she finds a connection. And the question is, does this shelter have something to do with the murders of these men who are basically waiting outside to kill their wives when they come out? As you know, abuse of women and femicide, and it's horrific, and these are real situations. So she goes undercover, posing as a battered woman, and to find out if there is a connection. I'll leave it at that. Her reason for becoming a homicide detective was because when she was 16, her father was assassinated by a pro-life fanatic. He was a doctor at Planned Parenthood, and she's looking for him. She's looking for the man who killed her father and destroyed her mother and younger brother's lives. And that's her personal obsession, which goes back to what you said, a novel about revenge, which it is. It's about her looking for this guy and sworn to kill him, not to arrest him, but to kill him and take revenge. So there are two kind of themes in the book. One is revenge, and one is the abuse, horrific abuse against women and their own protection and survival. So, and because a Planned Parenthood doctor's murder is, I think, violence against women, because his job is to take care of women. So those are the two things. Now, the thing about revenge is, as you said, you love stories about revenge, and we all do. And then there's this contradiction, because we're raised and told and we adore and like, we like Clint and we like Liam Neeson and we like Denzel and all the people that get even. They kill the villains. They don't, action movies don't end in trials, that's for sure. And so but at the same time, we're told that's bad. And it's antisocial, and we have to reckon with that, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. I suppose it. For me, I have been working on and off on a revenge, an original screenplay, and it has to do with lawyers. who real life lawyers who really messed me up, and it's a film. I'll tell you this much: it's a film about a screenwriter who writes a film about revenge on lawyers, and the film comes out. It's a big hit, and the lawyers are invited to the premiere. They don't know why they're invited to the premiere, except for the fact that now the screenwriter is really going to get her revenge and kill all of them.
Oh,
but it's a little bit dark. Not sure if I'm going to.
A little bit. That's very dark. Sounds very exciting.
But
and we all have.
You know, lawyers can do things like that to you that can drive you crazy. So.
Oh, boy.
I think you know that. And so,
yep.
So it probably won't get done. But if I ever do it, I will invite the lawyers involved just to scare them. Just to scare the heck out of them. They'll live the rest of their lives worried. Is she really going to do it? Yeah, right.
Well, lawyers. It's interesting. I'm writing my next one is about a lawyer. Yeah, it's about a lawyer. He's a prosecutor, a federal prosecutor who quits his job to find out who murdered his wife. And set in Maui, so it's a thriller in Hawaii. I'm having a good time. And he comes up against, as a federal prosecutor, investigating fraud and Medicare fraud and securities fraud and gunmen and all that. He talks about the armies of lawyers that these people have, who can defeat him at every turn. I guess we both have the same feeling about lawyers.
Yeah. I think we've had similar experiences, let me put it that way, which is why I am on the West Coast. I'm on the West Coast of Florida instead of the West Coast in Los Angeles. There's a reason behind this madness. But it's funny. It is funny that you can have really enjoy so much writing about these things and Lee Child, when he wrote the first Jack Reacher book, he did so because he had been fired, and he wanted to get even with all of the any mentions in the book, the people who fired him. So I think there's a certain catharsis here when we can write about it.
Oh, absolutely. I can tell you it exists here. One of the motivations for writing, at least in Hollywood, is revenge. I'm going to get revenge on all the people who rejected me, turned me down, It's a motivating force for actors. I'm going to get to be a star, and then all the people who ignored me, didn't cast me or whatever. There was an executive. Well, what's his name? Les Moonves, who was finally fired from CBS. He was one of the most powerful people in Hollywood. Well, he started out as an actor. And when he became a producer, and then when he became a network executive, and then when he became the president of CBS, all along the way, he fired as all the people who turned him down, didn't cast him, refused to do business with people who, you know, who weren't nice to him. Oh, it was a bloodbath, and it was all based on revenge. He was getting even until, of course, the women that he had. Whatever.
But
they got even with him.
Exactly. As I said, revenge. Yeah. Revenge is there's something. It's exciting, and you certainly have put it to good use here. And you can go home now. As I said, it's one of those books that a great escape fiction, and people need escape at this time. you need a good book that you can get lost in. And by the way, the Audible version is I really like the Audible version.
Oh, great! You know, I haven't heard it yet, so I'm going to listen to it. So start listening to it
you can start.
I mean, I heard some of her other books this reader, and I thought she was terrific.
She is terrific, and I think Audible is so great, particularly for thrillers and this type of book, because if you have the right narrator who, you know, really grabs that attention. It is like a movie in your head, and it's terrific. And I think a lot of people find that nowadays. But you are like so successful in I don't know that you need to have revenge on anyone, because you've actually done so many wonderful things. And I know my listeners would love to hear just a little bit about some of the famous people that you have worked with, because you have worked with some of the most famous people, people who of course you are the
I start with. Yeah, sure. I'll certainly start with Steve Martin, because we wrote The Jerk together. Steve started out as a writer, and then transitioned to a comedian, and then kept writing. But he and I were on a little television show as writers. We were staff writers on, do you remember Pat Paulson?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he had a show, and Steve and I were writers, and Steve said to me one day, he said, you know, I want to be a comedian, and I've been starting an act and playing little nightclubs around L.A., and I like your humor, and maybe would you consider writing for me or with me for my act? And I said, wow, that's great. And I did. And we were friends, and I would just write material, you know, mostly with him. Or if I said, hey, Steve, I have a good idea for a little sketch for you. Here it is. And that was the beginning. And then at one point in my career, I had a manager whose client was Carl Reiner. And he said, I'm going to put you together with Carl. He needs a partner to help him write the last Dick Van Dyke show. And I spent a year working with Carl writing Dick Van Dyke shows. And that was an amazing experience. We would work in his office in his house. And he had on a shelf above his desk, a high shelf, 13 Emmys. And every time we would get into an argument, a friendly one, but an argument about what word to use or which was funny, this or that, he would just look up at the Emmys, point to the Emmys, I would say, okay, you win. And let's see, who else?
Gene Wilder?
Gene Wilder, yeah, on the Frisco Kid. He was great. Every time you write a screenplay, if you're lucky enough not to get fired after they buy it, which happens a lot.
No kidding.
Because the director wants their own, congratulations, you've sold the screenplay, and guess what? You're fired. But Gene, we worked with him on the screenplay for a couple of months, and that was a pretty amazing experience. He was a really funny guy. I love him. And let's see, who else did I work with?
Jeff Bloom. What's Jeff Bloom like?
He's
I mean Jeff Goldblum. I meant Goldblum.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, he's intense. And it's funny. He's 6'5". He's absolutely beautiful. He's built like a Greek god. And sometimes he plays like he's nervous little Woody Allen. And when I was directing him in this movie called Lush Life, I said, Jeff, you're this tough, cool guy. So you have to stop pointing. You have to stop stuttering. You have to just look people directly in the eye and you have to be cool. And he said, oh, wow, you're the first guy ever told me that. And I rushed over to put my arms around him and say, do not raise your hands and point. And, but he was great. And in the movie, he plays a saxophone player, but he's actually a very good and talented jazz piano player. He wanted to play the piano in the movie, but I said no. He has to play the saxophone. He was great. And Forrest Whitaker, terrific guy. He'd do four takes on like a scene, and all along the way, he would say, "What do you want me to do next? What do you want me to do next?" And I would say, tone it down a little bit. You can be a little more whatever, you know, what directors do. And then the last one, I always said to him, okay, this is yours. You do whatever you want, anything you want. And usually that was the best. That's the one we would use. He was great.
And of course, you were nominated for best director for that. So you are multi-talented, and that's the wonderful thing about being in Hollywood. You can write movies, even though they might go and turn around for 20 years. Or in this case, I think you've done a terrific job. Now, as a novelist, you're making your mark now with, I'm sure this You Can Go Home Now is going to be a big hit with people. Perfect reading everybody there is stuck in the house, pandemics, or you're out in the backyard in your hammock. Get this book. You will enjoy it. It's exciting. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes, it's called, Michael Elias. That's one word, MICHAELELIAS, writer.com.
Okay. Well, Michael Elias, I think you're fantastic. Your book is great. I look forward to the new one. I'm sure you're having fun writing it. Did you had to go to Hawaii for that one?
Well, it comes out of my memories of Hawaii, but I certainly look forward to going back and making sure I get everything right according to my memory. But you know, for a writer now, the internet is so amazing, and what you can do, and the information and the research you can do. And anyway, I try to my mantra is make it up. And then find out if it's true.
And go on an expense paid trip, tax deductible.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. It's been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Great questions. Great conversation.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye bye now. Bye. Wow, what a guy. I mean, he wrote The Jerk. You know, you can't go wrong with that. It was, of course, a big hit as a film, and he's just a wonderful guy. Wow. And he started off, he was acting, and he was writing, and so he's a really fascinating. I really admire screenwriters who write books, because when your script goes into turnaround of sometimes for years, and he's one of the things, I didn't want to bring it up. I didn't want to talk about his lawsuit. He has a famous lawsuit. Speaking of lawsuits, Bill Larson is going to be here. He's going to be back in the studio in July, which is really exciting for me, because we've all been sort of at a distance. If you have any questions, go to my website, radio-joyonpaper, and send me a question to ask Bill when he gets here into the studio. And, you know, everybody lands up, so many authors, I can tell you, land up with really sometimes very serious lawsuits. And you have to be careful out there, and you have to know your intellectual property rights and obligations when it comes to social media, because that is now, it's becoming one of the most dangerous areas for authors to get involved in social media without understanding what they're saying, because sometimes you write things, as they say, things don't disappear on the internet, and you could be very sorry if you write something that you shouldn't write and put it on the internet and then get sued because you've written it. And you don't want to get involved in that kind of thing. And so that's one of the subjects I will talk to Bill Larson about when he gets in here in July. And meanwhile, again, I want to thank my son, who is down here and has been in quarantine with us. It's been wonderful. I love that he's been in quarantine. He's going back up north, but it's been a joy to have him. And nobody better to be in quarantine with than my son, who is an absolute delight and always so. He does. He's doing all the cooking and helping me, and he's quite amazing. And so I'm very, very, very thankful and very lucky that he's been doing all this for me. But everybody, remember, one of the things I always tell all of you is one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those words, those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing a page a day. And in a year, my goodness, you're going to have an entire big, big fat book ready to start editing. So you never know. Just have fun with it. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And he's saluting me. I'm saluting him. And he keeps everything nice and clean here. And everything is really fantastic to be back here at Tan Talk Radio Network Studio. I love this place. I just love this place. Bye-bye now, everybody. Bye-bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
No kidding. Fauci update. I'm Mike Moss. President Trump says he wasn't kidding when he said he asked for testing to be slowed down because there are rising numbers of coronavirus infections.
About to board his helicopter, President Trump again contradicting his own aides, who say he was kidding when he proclaimed he, quote, said to my people, slow the testing down.
I don't kid. Let me just tell you. Let me make it clear. We have got the greatest testing program anywhere in the world. By having more tests, we find more cases.
But health experts, including Dr. Anthony Fauci, say the real concern is the percentage of tests that are positive versus negative.
When you see more percent